similar to of the background scalar field. As a time variable, which is changing the principle, so you could use scalar field to parameterize it. Yeah, background. So now, let's take and rewrite this equation in the following form. What is delta phi dot? Yeah, delta phi dot could be written down if you consider delta phi as a function of phi zero, yeah? It could be written like d over d phi zero multiplied by phi zero, correct? Correct. So you use just scalar field as a time variable to characterize the moment of time. Now, okay, so these equations, they take the following form. 3h phi dot d delta phi is perturbation, okay, derivative with respect to phi zero, which is background, plus d phi phi minus v phi squared over d, delta phi is equal to zero. Now, what is this? I could express in terms of the potentials. For the background, you know that for the background, you know that 3h phi 0 dot is equal minus e phi from here. It's lower order approximation. Therefore, this term is nothing more than just v phi minus v phi. And now this is elementary equation which could be solved very easily, right? So you just divide by v phi, and here delta phi. So what you will get? You will get, so. So it will be here d delta phi over d phi, 0, delta phi here, we will divide, is equal v phi phi over v phi minus v phi over v. Now we can integrate over d phi 0, and then what we will get the logarithm delta phi, okay, from first term, is equal logarithm v phi minus logarithm v, plus constant of integration. Therefore, from here we will find the generic solution for delta phi as a function of the background value is delta phi is, okay, about constant of integration multiplied by v phi over v. So you see that it's very simple thing, no? Okay, so if, for instance, I would take power law potential, then I would get that this thing is proportional 1 divided by phi 0. And phi 0, background value, during inflation is, what happens with it, it's decreasing, of course, because during slow roll, what you do, you just go here, phi decrease. His potential, he is phi. Therefore, the amplitude of perturbation is growing. Moreover, more generic result, for general case, irrespective of scalar potential, sounds like this one. You could rewrite this expression, v phi over v, in the following form. What is v phi? Again, let's write it using this background equation. It's minus 3h phi dot divided by v, right? So v is proportional to Hubble constant squared. Well, Hubble constant squared is proportional to v, right? So then you would get that this thing is proportional to phi dot divided by h. What is phi dot? In terms of energy density and pressure. You remember that epsilon plus p was a scalar field with canonical term was phi 0 dot squared. Therefore, here in numerator you have square root of epsilon plus p, and Hubble constant squared was proportional epsilon. Therefore, you have here square root of epsilon. So you understand that in this slow roll regime, amplitude of delta phi is just proportional epsilon plus p divided by epsilon, square root of this quantity. Now, this thing grows in general or not? not just for scalar field, but for generic inflation, which I characterize in terms of pressure and energy density. Of course, growth, because on inflation, the energy density is decreasing, since energy density satisfies this equation, minus 3h epsilon plus p, correct? And if you don't have phantom sink, then epsilon dot is negative. Epsilon plus p, what happens with it? It's also increasing towards the end of the inflation, because at the beginning, epsilon plus p is nearly close to zero, so you have exponential expansion. And then when you want to finish inflation, epsilon plus p should become of the order of 1. Yeah? Therefore, generically, again generically, if you want to have successful graceful exit from inflation and smooth graceful exit, you have to start to deviate from cosmological constant more and more and more and more. And it means that epsilon plus p is growing. And epsilon plus p over epsilon is growing also generically. Therefore, how perturbation with the given wavelengths is evolving? Here is time, yeah? Here is the amplitude, okay? Let's write it delta phi, okay, for the given wave number. So, at the beginning, perturbation is very short wavelengths, yeah? So what happens with it? It's just oscillating, and its amplitude, when you stretch it, is decaying inversely proportional to scale factor. But till the moment when perturbation cross this curvature scale. At this moment of time, if I would use quantum fluctuation, yeah, as initial fluctuation, what will be the amplitude of this perturbation? The amplitude will be Hubble constant at this moment of time, yeah? Because you remember that scalar field is the same thing as a gravity wave. We know that for quantum fluctuations, it's just amplitude is inversely proportional to the physical scale. And after that, at the moment when k of the order of ha or k eta is of the order of 1, so these two conditions are equivalent, what happens? What was happening with gravity wave? This is time dependence of the amplitude of the particular perturbation with a given wave number. Yeah? So it has nothing to do with this spectrum. For spectra, I will repeat the whole procedure or the whole explanation once again because somebody complains that it was not so clear. So, good. So, after that, for scalar, for gravity wave, it was frozen, it was constant. Correct? Correct. Now, what happens after this moment with the scalar perturbation amplitude? The scalar perturbation amplitude is growing, as you can see from here or from here. And for instance, in power law inflation, it's growing inversely proportional to the scale, to the value of scalar field. Now, okay, so during the rest of the inflation, amplitude of perturbation is slightly growing. And then at a certain moment of time, inflation is over. You see? So scalar field becomes of the order of 1 here. And you have transition to radiation-dominated dust-dominated or radiation-dominated universe, for instance, okay? Then what will happen with delta phi? Delta phi will disappear, of course. So you cannot speak anymore in terms of delta phi. But there is also the other quantity which survives, irrespective of what kind of matter you have, namely gravitational potential. And you know that gravitational potential, we wrote Z. Okay, it was like this one, delta epsilon over epsilon, for any kind of matter. And in particular, for scalar field, it was V phi divided by V delta phi. Yeah? So at the end of the inflation, when phi is of the order of 1 for power law inflation, what happens with gravitational potential? What is gravitational potential? What is this term? It's again 1 over phi, right? So it's of the order of 1. So you see that at the end of the inflation, scalar field perturbation is precisely up to the coefficient of the order of 2 is equal to the perturbation of scalar field. And this perturbation is the metric potential, they survive. They are just, okay, due to after the decay of scalar field, due to the inhomogeneities in the component which were formed after this decay. So here nothing happens, for instance, for the gravitational potential. Gravitational potential then evolves like I described in the last lecture. So on the scale larger than the curvature scale, it stays just unchanged on the scale. Where, for instance, a perturbation comes inside the curvature scale, then the whole thing starts to evolve. But we will come still to this question a little bit later. So if you would draw here delta phi, then you could trust in this thing until now. And if you would draw phi capital, then after the phi capital just stays constant. So all non-trivial evolution are here. On the stage with perturbation and inflation, left horizon, and then after that, okay, it still was stretched and inflation was going on. And why this perturbation evolution is non-trivial? Because you see, equation of state is changing. If epsilon plus p divided by epsilon, like for any kind of, for instance, for radiation would stay constant, then it also would remain constant. You see, so what influence the behavior of perturbation on the scale larger than the curvature scale is the change of equation of state. And when the C epsilon plus P of epsilon change significantly in the universe, only when you have inflation. Because otherwise for radiation it's constant, for dust it's constant, etc., etc., etc. You see? So this is the most non-trivial piece. Now let's use this picture to build the spectrum of perturbation. Okay, and I will describe, as I told you already, first, generic picture in quite detail.
Just a moment, but this is for not perfect receptor, but inflation which
of course
the receptor spoiled by slow roll.
Absolutely. But as I said, for perfect receptor, epsilon plus p is equal to zero.
This is just
For pure de Sitter, all this consideration doesn't make any sense, because pure de Sitter you have only in the case where you have pure cosmological constant. The constant you cannot perturb, therefore you cannot have this perturbation.
So the origin of inflation, epsilon plus p is small, but then it starts growing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have graceful exit, you see, because we want to get graceful exit. And finally, we want to get the amplitude of perturbation after graceful exit. You see? So, how generic
about this relation that phi is minus 1/2 of delta epsilon epsilon? This is valid only also on the slow roll stage, or it is
this one? No, this one is precise.
No, I mean that 2 phi minus 2 phi.
No, this is valid. What this relation is valid, if you will neglect decaying mode, as I explained last time, is valid always on the scale larger than the horizon scale.
So not necessarily in the...
Not necessarily slow roll, yeah.
Neglecting the...
decaying mode.
And large...
large scale, yeah.
Super horizon.
Yeah. So this is why this coordinate system is so nice. Because usually, question is interpretation of all the results arise when people consider scales which are larger than the curvature scale. You see, and for instance, in different gauges, like synchronous gauge, one quantity can be 20 orders of magnitude smaller than the other quantity. So one quantity can be minus 5 and the other minus 25. So how can you say perturbation small or large? But here all the quantities which characterize perturbation are of the same order of magnitude. You see, therefore, this coordinate system is extremely good in this sense, because it doesn't make any confusion. Now, before I will get analytical formula, yeah.
So we got delta phi is V phi over V, this is phi.
Yeah.
Then we also got that this big phi is V phi over V delta phi. So can we substitute in that formula for big phi?
For big phi, what you want
to substitute? Delta phi is equal to V.
Sure, and actually we substitute for here.
We will get V phi over V squared.
Over V squared, but you see V phi over V squared, so phi capital grows on inflation proportionally V phi over V squared, because delta phi itself grows like V phi over V.
That seems to contradict. Phi big is delta energy over energy.
No, it doesn't quadratic, because actually it's...
So we'll have two problems for V phi over V. It will be square root of delta E over E, but it's also square root of...
No, it's this thing is V phi over V.
Right.
Yeah.
But so from big phi is also delta E over E.
Yeah, but this is not delta E over E, it's epsilon plus T from the ground, you see? And delta E over E is different from delta phi by this coefficient.
So can you write that big phi is delta E over E?
Yeah. Big phi is delta E over E.
Therefore you get that V phi over V is square root of delta E over E, just for these two problems.
No, just let me say what is.
Well, take a square root
of what?
Of these two formulas.
Of these two formulas?
Or of these two, the last two. You get V phi over V is square root.
Yeah, okay, good, but then what?
But then it seems to contradict.
No, it's not contradicting, because there are also coefficient constant of integration. This is only time dependence.
But then we get the square root of E over.
No, it's not actually, it doesn't mean from this formula, it doesn't follow the square root of phi capital is delta phi.
It simply expresses delta epsilon in terms of
Okay, you have formula for delta phi. Delta phi is proportional V phi over V, right? And phi capital is proportional V phi over V delta phi. Therefore, it's proportional, I mean, time dependence is proportional V phi over V square. And these two things is time dependence.
But it seems to be second order.
No, it's not second order, because V phi over V is not, has nothing to do with the smallness of perturbation. It's actually a function of time. You see, it's zero order things. So it's 1 over phi capital, and this is 1 over phi zero square. So, but it has nothing to do with the order of perturbation. Because order of perturbation here is characterized by this coefficient ak. And here it's characterized by coefficient ak. This is actually what is the order of perturbation. And V phi over V is just time dependence. You see, it's like function t over t0 in one case multiplied by 10 minus 5. And in the other case, it's t0 over t squared multiplied by 10 minus 5. Yeah, something like this one. So order is the same. Now, let me build the spectra once more, okay? Which we will get as a result of this evolution, yeah, step by step. In more detail, and after that I will get analytical formula for this spectra. So now, what we have? Okay, for delta phi. And let's consider moment a little bit before the end of the equation when scalar fields still exist. Yeah, at the moment of graceful exit when it still didn't decay. So, because after that nothing happens, as I told you, with gravitational potential. Scalar field disappears, but gravitational potential stays the same. Also, if you would compare these two formulas, which relate delta phi, okay, when phi capital is equal V phi over V delta phi, yeah, then at the end of the inflation, V phi over V is of the order of 1, correct? Because it's epsilon plus p over epsilon. Or in the other words, it's 1 over phi. And phi at the end of the inflation is equal 1. Therefore, at the end of the inflation, Tf, I didn't denote this moment of time, okay, gravitational potential is equal, roughly speaking, okay, delta phi at the end of the inflation. But before they are different by V phi over V. Okay, so three times or five times. Okay, good. And therefore, if we will calculate this thing at the end of the inflation, so using this evolution.
So you assume that phi background at the end of inflation is order of
one. I don't assume, I proved it last time when I was considering background models that actually is of the order of one. And also for generic model, because this thing you could write like square root of epsilon plus p divided by epsilon, you know what is the end of the inflation, when epsilon plus p over epsilon is of the order of 1, yeah? And of course, now if you would calculate this c at the end of the inflation, and you trust that nothing happens with the gravitational potential after this, then we are done. Now let's calculate delta phi over phi, yeah? Delta phi, so it's k squared, k cubed again, square root. And this, let's write physical wave waves. And let's take initial moment of time. So t, like t initial. Then at initial moment of time, we will take the minimal fluctuations in those scales where we know what do they mean, these minimal fluctuations. And this scale where we know what do they mean are the scales smaller than h minus 1 at the beginning of inflation, at initial moment of time. So we have spectra here like this one, inversely proportional to the scale. So, not inversely, it's, I can precisely even exactly, okay, so it's like this one. So, it's clear that on the horizon, its amplitude is h minus 1 here, at this point of the spectrum. Here we don't know what is going on. Then, let's take next moment of time and let's see what will happen. So, here again, lambda physical, or the scale of perturbation versus the amplitude of perturbation, delta phi k squared multiplied by k cubed squared. What happened during...
Here it's not h to the minus 1, but just h on the left, you see.
Here?
No. On the vertical axis.
Sorry. So, and also hi. Yeah, so what happens with this spectrum? Let's take a couple of waves again, and let's see how these waves would evolve, yeah? So first wave, let's take here. Second wavelength, let's take here. And third wavelength, let's take here. So time goes on, right? This perturbation left horizon at the beginning. What happened with it? Yeah? Of course, its amplitude is slightly growing, in distinction from gravity wave. Gravity wave amplitude stays constant. But the perturbation, the amplitude of perturbation, of scalar perturbation, which left horizon, grows proportional to this scale factor. So a little bit. Therefore, okay, for this scalar field perturbation, okay, so it left horizon instead of moving here, along this curve, it also will go a little bit up. Correct? And gravity wave, let me denote gravity wave like this one here, yeah, will have constant amplitude. So gravity wave would come here at this moment of time, right? So how spectra will be deformed at the next moment of time t is equal to t1. The spectrum would be deformed in the following way. This spectrum will stay the same because actually everything what will be taken away will be compensated by the things which come from the Planckian's case, if you want. So, but, okay, this perturbation at next moment of time will come here a little bit, yeah, will come here. So it's, you see, it's higher than h initial on the on offset. And scalar, and if you want to know what was the value of hi initial, then you draw here also the amplitude of the gravity wave. So it's gravity wave.
Now, just a moment. So the amount of the shift to the right is just measured by the growth of, by the stretch of the same length.
Yeah. So this scale at this moment of time corresponds to scale which is hi minus 1, yeah, initial, multiplied by a scale factor at the moment of time t1, I can see it as the moment t1, divided by a initial. You see? Correct? Correct. Now, what happens with this perturbation? It will also, at the beginning, will slide down, but then will leave horizon, and then will come somewhere here. Yeah? Because it will increase, but it will have less time to increase because it left horizon a little bit later. And the gravity wave will come somewhere here. Why? Because as I told you, that this next perturbation, when it was leaving horizon, or did it cross this thing, already, okay, some time passed, and h minus 1 will decrease, will increase a little bit. You see? If h would not be changing, then it would be at the same level. But as it should be for gravity wave. But this thing would be, even in this case, a little bit upper. Why? Because you understand that this thing also is growing a little bit. And then, okay, this perturbation just, oh, it was this color, yeah. And this perturbation just will come here, let's assume, like this one. Now, let's wait further. What will happen further?
I think that this, in the middle, this upper cross should be in red.
Which one?
This one should be in red.
Why?
You use red to denote the scalar perturbation.
No, red I denoted this wavelength for scalar perturbation. This is the next wavelength for scalar perturbation.
Oh,
this,
I see.
This is the third scale.
You mark all.
Yeah, no. And gravity wave I will denote all these dots because I already have drawn ones for gravity waves, I think, yeah? So now let's wait first. What will happen with this thing? And let's finally draw the spectra of perturbation at the final moment of time, at the end of the inflation. Yeah? Then this red part will be shifted even more, correct? And then also its amplitude will grow further a little bit. Therefore, these red things will come somewhere. Okay, so let me draw first this kind of things. Yeah, so initial spectra, but it's already here at the end of the inflation. Yeah, so it will be H minus 1 final. Okay, and it will be shifted, of course, on the right a little bit. Now, this thing will come here. For the scalar perturbation, and it will correspond to the scale of the order of hi minus 1 multiplied by a tf over a initial. So you see, it's the overall stretch during inflation. Now, gravity wave, of course, also will come in this place. But it will be somewhere here, because its amplitude for the gravity wave was not changing. And if you would ask for the ratio of this amplitude, you would find that this thing was proportional to square root of epsilon plus p over epsilon. Yeah? And this thing is just constant. Therefore, the ratio of these two things would be so tensor perturbation, or scalar perturbation, or better to say, tensor perturbation to scalar perturbation will be proportional to this factor. Okay, so tensor will be less by this increase. So it will be square root of proportional 1 plus square root of epsilon p over epsilon at the moment of horizon crossing for the appropriate perturbation.
Just a minute. This or other way around. S over t, or t or less.
Tensor over S, they should be smaller. And this thing is clearly smaller than 1, because epsilon plus P on inflation is much smaller than epsilon.
So here we have scalar perturbation, which is proportional to square of epsilon plus P over epsilon.
There, and here also the same.
But this is scalar to tensor, not tensor, yes,
as in the T.
It's T over S, because one thing is growing, the other thing stays constant. And then you understand that this thing actually should be smaller for tensor perturbation, because this thing is inversely proportional, or how it's called, is directly proportional.
Well, here is delta phi, this is scalar, yeah?
Yeah, it's scalar. Right. But take initial value of this thing, yeah, and then you could write this thing as delta phi, is delta phi initial epsilon plus phi, roughly speaking, initial, yeah, over epsilon plus phi final over epsilon plus phi initial. Epsilon plus phi final is of the order of 1. So you understand that delta phi is inversely proportional to delta epsilon plus phi initial, roughly speaking. This is what I have written.
Initial,
because at the end of the equation, epsilon plus phi is of the order of 1. So yeah. HA is initial, means that actually the moment of horizon crossing. Then, the other thing which will come here, yeah, will be, okay, for gravity wave, it will be staying here. Why? Because for gravity wave, this change in the amplitude is due to only one factor, namely to the change of H in the course of the inflation.
So just this small logarithmic.
Yeah, and this also a logarithmic, but actually amplitude is high for them. Yeah, because they are amplified. Now, and then this perturbation, okay, will come somewhere. I already confused the colors, but okay, doesn't matter, they are similar. Okay, then the next perturbation will be here, scalar perturbation, and the third perturbation will be somewhere here. Yeah? So these are three wavelengths at the end of the inflation which determine you the spectra. So for gravity wave, you got the spectra which is like this one. And here, of course, you do not know what is this. And for the scalar perturbation, you got the things which are like this one. So they are also, of course, logarithmically dependent on the scale, because the things are changing very slowly, yeah. Hubble constant, epsilon plus phi over epsilon also changing as a logarithm of scale factor. But because there is extra growth factor for the scalar perturbation, amplitude of scalar perturbation is larger than the amplitude of tensor perturbation. And namely, it's larger by this amount. You see? So if you would take, for instance, the wavelengths, like largest one, you remember, to which epsilon plus p over epsilon, it corresponds in generic case. Because it should be, if we want to have 70 folds, for instance, till the end of the inflation, then epsilon plus p over epsilon already should begin to deviate significantly, yeah? 70 fold before the end of the inflation. Because if it's too close to zero, then inflation will go, I don't know for how long. But when already there are a couple of percent deviations, then generically in 70 fold, this couple of percent will become 100%. Therefore, for the ratio of tensor to scalar perturbation, you are getting some coefficient, up to numerical coefficient here, square root of 100. So it's 1 over 10. So 10 times less on the scale of the present horizon, there should be amplitude of gravity wave compared to the amplitude of scalar perturbation.
This is fixed by how long you want inflation to last.
This is fixed by how long you want inflation to last. And for instance, no, inflation can last and bring this scale even in the maximum possible scales, as you understand. But when you ask, for instance, assume that you live here somewhere, and then you want to ask for this scale, yeah? What is the ratio of these two things? And you know that this scale is the scale of present horizon, and also you know that this scale left curvature scale on inflation 70 e-folds before the end of the household. Since this scale left household the horizon, there passed only 70 e-folds before the end of the inflation. And then you know that there should be already deviation of epsilon plus phi over epsilon at this time. Yeah?
It's square root number larger than 1 and smaller than 1.
No, it's not smaller than 1. Epsilon plus p over epsilon at the beginning of inflation is 1 over 100. So square root of 1 over 100 is 1/10. Because epsilon plus p
is negative.
P is negative.
P is negative.
Yeah.
And p is
you see, epsilon plus p over epsilon is much smaller than 1 on inflation. And when these things become of the order of 1, because this ratio is changing, inflation is over. You You see? So now let's derive analytic formula for this thing. How to derive analytic formula? You know that actually it's a trivial calculation. You just, okay, we'll take this long wave perturbation with a known coefficient here, constant of integration, and then fix this constant of integration at the moment of horizon crossing. Yeah? Because you know that at this moment, amplitude of perturbation should be h, okay, at h. So, how to do it? Okay. So it's very easy. So, after horizon crossing, amplitude of perturbation is changing like ak, where ak is a constant for integration for the given k, yeah, multiplied by v phi over v. Now we want to fix this. How we will fix this? Let's take this perturbation with the given Kamovian wavelength and let's trace it back to the moment when k satisfied condition HAK. Yeah? So it's particular moment of time when this condition was satisfied. So it's equivalent to the condition k eta is of the order of 1 for a given k. Okay, so particular moment of time when this condition was satisfied for the given k. Clear. Now we know that at this moment of time, what was the amplitude of delta phi? It's inversely proportional to scale, yeah? So it was h at this particular moment of time. Clear? And should be equal to ak multiplied by v phi over v again at this particular moment of time for the given perturbation. Correct? Clear. Therefore, what you are getting? You are getting from here that ak is nothing more than just h multiplied by v over v phi taken at this particular moment of time when perturbation was crossing tunnels. Now, okay, the final result for the gravitational potential and for delta phi after inflation can be expressed, of course, in terms of delta phi and in terms of AK. Right. So, what is delta phi as a function of k? Okay, or you could write delta phi k squared, square root of k cubed, square root. Okay, so this is the thing which I mean, yeah. What it was? It was AK at the t final moment of time. It's AK. V phi over V taken also as a final moment of time when inflation is over. So what is this ratio when inflation is over? So the order of 1, yeah? Because V phi over V is of the order of 1. Therefore, you would get that at the end of the inflation, the spectrum of delta phi is just precisely equal to AK, which we found here. So it's h v divided by v phi at the moment of horizon crossing. So don't confuse this v phi over v, it's a function of time, yeah, with this ratio, which just enters coefficient ak for the given k, and it's the value of this ratio at the moment when perturbation with the given scale leaves, crosses the Hubble scale. Now, we know also that gravitational potential at the end of the inflation, as I showed you, is nothing more than just delta phi fluctuation itself, because they are different by v phi over v, where it was here. And this thing is of the order of 1. Therefore, you get this result, that gravitational potential as a function of scale at the end of the inflation is given by this expression.
Yeah? And let's rewrite it in two different forms once more, because you then immediately recognize what people usually write in the literature. So, one thing here. So, what is H in terms of the potential? Because this quantity is estimated on slow roll inflation, yeah? So, H in terms of the potential is square root of potential, V. Correct. Therefore, you could write that phi should be, as a function spectrum, should be equal to V in power 3, 2 divided by the derivative of V taken at appropriate moment of time. It's one form, which you have seen perhaps. Now, the other way, also V phi could be rewritten in at least in a little bit different also form. I just write different forms for the same result. So what was V phi? V phi was 3H phi dot, roughly speaking, yeah? And V is H squared. So how else could you rewrite this formula? You could rewrite this formula as H delta phi over H squared divided by phi dot at the moment of horizon crossing. It's the other way to rewrite the same formula. Now you know that the amplitude H is nothing more than just delta phi at the moment of horizon crossing, correct? Correct. So, therefore, you could rewrite the same formula like this one. Delta phi divided by phi dot at the moment of horizon crossing. Because delta phi is H. So what you recognize in this formula, if you would like to recognize it?
Just a moment. Get to this report in the middle. You are talking about this factor which is taken at the horizon crossing, but there is also a factor of V phi over V at T final.
Yeah, but this is one.
So this is one, why? For
V? Because, once more, yeah? This thing is 1 divided by phi, yeah? Of the order.
Then
phi is 1 at the end of inflation.
This is
the little. Now, what is this delta phi over phi dot? People were writing that it's delta t, time delay, so-called time delay. And then they wrote this bloody time delay derivation of this formula. So the derivation of the formula in all these papers in 82 was like this one. If stellar field is inhomogeneous, then there is time delay. Okay, like this one. And then, if you want to see what will be the metric fluctuation, because they are, roughly speaking, dimensionless, you just multiply it by half. So this is the whole derivation of the papers on 1982, especially Booth and P paper. Because they do not specify gauge, they do not do anything, say, in fact, because you could take gauge where delta phi is identically equal zero, and so you will get zeros there. Also, synchronous gauge, which Stravinsky used, okay? There, on the scale line of the horizon, delta phi just doesn't exist. Because it just decays with the proportional scale factor. But, of course, if you would be a good student, that you would ask task, okay, to build dimensionless quantity from delta phi, phi dot, and H, yeah, in a reasonable way, then of course you would do it immediately. Okay, but I don't want to go further in criticism. You can solve four equations in my book for four problems, and then you will see that nothing will be left from these papers, okay, by Hawking, Bardeenstein, Turner, Puss and Pierce, Staravinsky also. But I devoted to every of these papers one exercise. So, now, let's actually rewrite this thing also in a little bit different form when we do not refer to scalar field at all. Yeah? Then, how it will look like? What is this? It's V phi. So what we want to do, we want to rewrite it in terms of energy density and pressure. Yeah? So this thing was 3H phi dot. So let's take this, yeah?
So what is phi dot? Phi dot is square root of epsilon plus p, as we said. Here we have h, yeah, so h squared is epsilon. So what kind of formula you are getting from here in terms of epsilon and p? You are getting the following formula, that epsilon phi with the accuracy of the order of 1 is given by expression from here, 1 divided by 1 plus p over epsilon, epsilon over epsilon plus, if you want, here 1 half. And here also square root. Square root or no square root? Square. Yeah, square root. Square root. Good. So now it's correct. So and this quantity should be taken at the moment of horizon crossing. Now, if I would not do the theory of scalar field, I would try to describe everything with the help of just effective equation of state, then I could repeat derivation which I did today, and then generically I will get this formula in terms of energy density and in terms of equation of state, or deviation of equation of state from W equal minus 1. And this formula refers to the end of inflation. You shouldn't apply it during inflation. Now, you see, if you would have, for instance, cosmological constant, that this coefficient would be zero. And you understand that for cosmological constant from this formula, you would get nonsense. You would get infinite perturbations. Right? But, of course, if you would have cosmological constant, there would be no graceful exit, and say there would be no moment of time where you could apply this formula. Because it refers to the graceful exit moment. Also, from this formula, you see, so it's better to write here like this one, k squared, k cubed. Also, from this formula, you see that the amplitude of scalar perturbation is larger than the amplitude of gravity waves, because what we got from the amplitude of gravity wave, we got that this thing is of the order of epsilon over epsilon Planck square root of epsilon. You see? And scalar perturbation, of course, has larger amplitude precisely by the deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant, by square root of this thing. If you would take here, okay, epsilon plus p, at the moment, okay, when the appropriate scale leave horizons of 50 folds before the end of the inflation, then you would find precisely that amplitude of scalar perturbation here should be of the order of 10 factor larger than the amplitude of tensor perturbations.
By the way, why it is always said that this 50 or 60 folds before the end?
Because if we will take today's scale, we'll cross back to the inflation, then we will find that this scale left inflation, okay, so how it's called, it corresponds to 50 folds. Everything what came today within observable horizon, yeah, it was leaving horizon, okay, which is scalar inflation during the last 70 folds. Everything what left horizon before came.
Present-day horizon scale corresponds to
70 folds before the end of the inflation.
70 yeah. Folds before
the end of the inflation.
And this number is independent of the model of inflation.
A little bit, but not too much. Okay, so you could 65, 70, depending on the model, depending on the reheating, how long reheating takes, but actually the variations really are not so large.
Did you derive this in the previous lectures?
I derived it in the previous lectures. Yeah, because everything was left inflation before, yeah, and if inflation was after some scale left inflation, and inflation was, for instance, still lasting for 100 defaults, then this scale will be thrown on the scales which are larger than the observable horizon today. And everything what we see today, of course, left horizon, left this kind of this stage of exponential inflation, not later than the last 70 folds. Now, let's see how this formula works in the case of
m squared phi squared potential. Just let's actually see what will be the dependence on the scale, which follows from this formula, because you have to express epsilon plus e at this moment of horizon crossing, and as a result, you will get dependence on dependence of the amplitude on the spectra, on the wave number. Also, by the way, pay attention that if you would begin inflation, for instance, if you want to get amplitude here of the order of 10 minus 5, this factor is of the order of 50, normally, or of the order of 10, 110. So what should be the energy density? It should be smaller than the Planckian energy density by at least 10, 12 orders of magnitude. In this case, 12 orders of magnitude, because of this 1 plus p of epsilon factor, you get extra 10 or 50, I forgot already, So whether if you want to get 10 minus 5, then you have to take at the end of the inflation, the energy density, 10 orders of 15 orders, 10, 15, 10, 12 orders of magnitude lower than the Planckian density. So perturbation, which are relevant for today's observation, left inflation or left horizon on inflation at the moment where energy density of inflaton field was by 10 orders of magnitude less than the Planckian energy density. So it's of course close to Planckian densities, but nevertheless it's 10 orders of magnitude less, therefore you should not care about non-perturbative quantum gravity. Now let's take and apply this formula to the scalar field case. So massive scalar field. After that, you know that a lot of people just were taking this formula written in one or the other form, this total potential, and applying it to all kinds of potentials, then you can write one paper, second, third, fourth, etc. So, now, let's do it for massive scalar field. And then you will see how the whole thing is built. So, what we have for massive scalar field? So let's use formula like this one. Phi is of the order of V in power 3, 2 divided by V phi, at the moment of horizon cross. Here you should understand that it's Vk squared multiplied by Kq, practically speaking, in square root of this point. Now, let's take potential, which is 1 half m squared phi squared, And then what we will get here, that this thing is m cube phi cube divided by m squared phi. I think it's okay, And this quantity should be taken at the moment of horizon crossing for the appropriate wavelengths, because here I want to find how gravitational potential depends on wavelengths, which is just 1 divided by k. So then it's m multiplied by phi squared, the value of the inflaton field at the moment when perturbation is given k crosses curvature scale. So now let's determine this. What is the condition for crossing curvature scale? It's Ka is of the order of h. H also should be taken, of course, at this moment of time. Now let's substitute here scale factor, how it depends on the value of the background field, and solve this equation. What was the dependence of scale factor on the value of the background field in the model of with power law potential? If you remember, you could write during inflation scale factor, as scale factor at the end of inflation multiplied by exponent minus 2 pi phi squared current value of inflaton field. You see, at the end of inflation, phi of the order of 1 or 0, whatever you want, scale factor is equal to the AF. At the beginning of inflation, phi is very large, therefore scale factor is suppressed by this exponent. 70. Now, let's substitute this thing in this equation, then what we will get? We will get AF exponent minus 2p phi at the moment with perturbation cross horizon squared is of the k multiplied by is equal h at this moment of time. You see, h is changing a little bit during inflation compared to this exponent. Therefore, let me consider h as a constant. Yes, of course, it makes some estimate, introduce some error, but nevertheless, this error is not so large. And then from here, we will find that phi k at the moment when of horizon crossing squared is equal just logarithm h. Now I will not write this subscript. Take some average value of inflation, h af divided by k. So what is k af divided by k? It's the physical wavelength of perturbation at the end of inflation. Yeah, because 1 over k is Kamovian.
H divided by k a
final. A final. Yeah? No, it should be in numerator.
Or
just wait a minute. K. So it should be like this. K should be HA. Yeah, you see here. Sorry. So here should be H. And here should be K. Yeah, Andrei, thank you very much. You are not sleeping, yeah? So you are okay. Okay, AF. So this factor is nothing more than just logarithm of lambda physical wavelengths at the end of the inflation divided by H up to the side, yeah? H minus 1, yeah? Not up to the side, precisely. So you see, this h minus 1 at the end of the inflation, or maybe at the beginning, it's not changing very much, comes here. And it's of the order this scale corresponds, because after inflation we produce photons, yeah, as a result. This scale is about the scale, or the typical wavelength of the photon, yeah, which will be produced for with reheating. This photon will be stretched, of course, today, and we'll have typical wavelength 0.1 millimeter. It's background radiation. Therefore, this thing is stretched, this thing is stretched. So this thing comes to galactic scale, this thing comes to so-called scale of the photon. Yeah? Therefore, you could rewrite this formula in terms of the present things. Yeah? You could substitute here galactic scale without recalculating to the end of the inflation, and here, instead of this thing, the wavelength of the photon. If you take galactic scale here, take the scale of the photon, then you will get for this logarithm the factor of the order of 50. Yeah? Correct. But let's forget for a minute about it, and let's use this formula for phi squared here. And then what we will get? We will get that the final amplitude of perturbation is m multiplied by logarithm lambda physical over h minus 1. So you got nice spectra. It's in Planck unit. If you don't want to use Planck unit, then to get dimensionless quantity, you just have to divide here by Planck mass. So this factor for the scales in which we are interested in, of the order of 50, right?
Just a moment, Slav. So this is lambda physical here is observable physical length at the end of inflation.
Yeah.
And h minus
1
here is
also taken. Right, but you see difference is very small. Two orders of magnitude.
Under logarithm.
Yeah, because logarithm here. You see it's two orders of magnitude perhaps changing in the relevant scales. Or one order of magnitude. This quantity h for the relevant interval of the scales in which we are interested in is changing during inflation by order of magnitude. But you understand the order of magnitude in logarithm, yeah? Nu3 to 50. So instead of 50, you would write the 53. So analytically, okay, it's some kind of uncontrollable accuracy. So I cannot do it better. If you want, you can solve this equation on computer and then do it better. But 53 or 50, it doesn't matter, in fact. Why? Because we do not know the amplitude. We take amplitude from the measurement, as you understand. And this is free parameter of the theory. If you want to fit or to fit the current observational data. You see, now, this thing is 50. So what you should take for mass if you want to get 10 minus 5? You have to get 10^13 GV, of course, because Planckian mass is 10^19 GV. And here, the mass should be 10^13 GV. Therefore, for what? For inflation, it's okay. For you, perhaps too heavy, but for inflation, it's okay. For particle physics, I don't know actually what is too heavy or too light for particle physics. As you know, and particle physicists themselves don't know what is too light and too heavy. Because neutrinos are too light. By the way, there is also this neutral spiral neutrino, okay, with the mass 10^11. But it has nothing to do with scalar field. Therefore, I don't care about particle physics, honestly speaking, at this point. Why? Because I don't need even to consider this m squared phi squared model, since I have generic formula for the perturbation just in terms of the equation of state, as you understand. But here, nevertheless, you have logarithmic dependence of the spectra on the scale. And it's quite interesting thing, right? Because look at this thing. And let's assume that inflation was lasting, I don't know, how many folds? 10, 12, or whatever, not 10, 12, but exponent 10, 12, as I told last time. Then, of course, we are living here somewhere. This is a fixed scale. But if we had a lot of inflation before, then this part runs like this one. And at a certain point, of course, its amplitude here will become, because of this logarithmic growth, of the order of 1. So what does it mean, this thing? It means quite interesting thing. It means that the universe will enter the regime of self-reproduction. Why so? Assume that you started with inhomogeneous universe. Then first thing which inflation does for you, it prepares you extremely large piece of homogeneous universe. But there are also quantum fluctuations. And if you will wait for long enough, then this quantum fluctuation will spoil again homogeneity, but already in incredible scales. Therefore, generic prediction of inflation that the universe is extremely inhomogeneous on incredibly large scales. You see, because of these kind of things. But these large scales are much, much larger than the present horizon. So the picture which you are getting in this case, if you take into account quantum fluctuations, is the following. If you would take the whole universe and it's perhaps infinite and extremely inhomogeneous, then you live in little piece of this universe, which is extremely homogeneous, and then on smaller scale, like galactic scale, there are again big inhomogeneities. Therefore, if you take this picture seriously, then you will get that Friedman model has nothing to do if you try to describe the universe as a whole. You see? Because universe becomes also here, it enters in so-called self-reproduction scale. What is self-reproduction of the universe? You know that the field, for instance, how field is evolving normally? Field is evolving normally, okay, it slows, goes down in the normal conditions. So if you would draw, for instance, the evolution of scalar field as a function of time, then normally what you would expect, the field goes like this one, linearly down, for m squared, phi squared potential. Yeah, I have derived this thing, phi initial. And there are small quantum fluctuations around it. And the amplitude of these small quantum fluctuations, if you remember, it's proportional to h, yeah? But now let's begin at large values of scalar field, but still below the Planckian values, yeah? Planckian energy density, yeah? Then, the amplitude of quantum fluctuations, of course, is proportional to h, and it becomes like this one. And then, if you will begin at some initial value of scalar field, which is, okay, which corresponds to phi, 1 divided by square root of m, where the energy density is still 6 orders of magnitude smaller than the Planckian energy density, yeah, for this 13 GeV. What you would get? You would get that the field, instead of going down in average, it will start to behave like crazy because of these quantum fluctuations, which will be larger than the classical slow roll. You understand? And as a result, what you will do, you will have here one region where field, okay, became like drunk stellar, yeah? Then, okay, drunk stellar finally arrived to his home and then produced universe like we see today, yeah? The other drunk stellar produced the other universe. So you are getting the picture where you are producing, beginning from some initial condition, you are producing, producing, and producing new regions, and inflation goes forever, but somewhere outside the present horizon. And our present horizon is one thing. But one of the unsolved problems, which actually, you know, that which mostly Russians are doing, I mean, Vilenkin and Lindner, and when Booth actually joined with this thing, was giving talk, he told that the only thing in his talk in Cambridge, which will be new, is perhaps non-Russian accent about this topic, you see? But one of the main problems which remains unsolved, you see, on one side, you know everything there because you are in some Planckian scales, you know how field behaves, and so on, so on. What is ridiculously actually difficult is to introduce the measure on all these drunk sellers, which travel like this one, you see? Now, the last thing which I want to say concerns not this romantic thing, yeah? Because this romantic thing goes forever, perhaps actually, it doesn't have anything to do with, yeah.
I do not understand how the drunk one starts behaving well.
Because sometimes he drops, okay, like this one, and falls under in some region by chance, where fluctuations are becoming very small, because fluctuations. Okay, oh, the amount of alcohol in his blood is proportional to H, yeah? So sometimes the amount of alcohol drops down by probability law, yeah? And he becomes non-drunk and then he goes a normal way.
He goes home,
yeah. So, but of course, if you will begin with one guy, okay, then it will be producing always on the way a lot of other drunk guys and it will go forever. So it's the idea of eternal inflation. But you know that this is, spite of the people say sometimes, okay, I want to apply what I did immediately to the observations, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, okay, it's not necessary condition. People should do something interesting just simply, okay? It's interesting thing in spite of the fact that you do not see how to apply immediately the result, of course, this global structure of the universe to observation. But it will pose problem which have no solution, and much more interesting than all these measures in landscape, by the way, but much more difficult also. Now, the last thing on which I want to concentrate is this concrete prediction from inflation, you see? Because what can you do now? Logarithmic running of the spectrum, by the way, is very important thing, and you have seen from this what kind of thing it's related. Because you have seen that this kind of big dependence on the scale was appearing because energy density was changing and deviation of equation of state from cosmological constant was changing. And you needed this thing for graceful exit, right? Because without it, there would be no graceful exit. Therefore, this logarithmic running of the spectra has very good physical explanation. It's due to the necessity of graceful exit from inflation to Friedman universe. And it's extremely important. Why? Because it's generic predictions of all non-perverse inflationary models. You see, now, logarithmic running is, of course, you know, imagine that in QCD there would be no logarithmic running, yeah? Then what would you do there? Nothing. Here, it's more or less the same thing, but you can apply your formulas here in this region. So about this thing, you could think that it's the region of asymptotic freedom. You live in the region of asymptotic freedom, who knows QCD. And here, when this thing becomes of the order of one, you have something like confinement on large scales, you see? And precisely like in QCD, nobody knows how to describe it, nobody knows how to describe the global structure of the universe on the scale which exceeds actually the scale which corresponds to the maximum of this scale. But now, we live here
Yeah? So here, this picture, of course, is logarithmic. But what astronomers do? Astronomers take this thing, phi k squared, k cubed, square root, and then approximate it within limited range, which we observe, yeah? They approximate it like power law thing. K in power n s minus 1. Well, if there would be no logarithmic running, ns would be equal precisely 1. Why it's ns minus 1? Don't ask me, because it's again historical astronomical reason. Now, but because there is logarithmic running, you expect that ns should be smaller than 1. So amplitude of perturbation should grow when you go to larger scales. You see, for a very long time, okay, I don't know, not me, but a lot of other people, we are saying that inflation predicts flat Harrison-Zendovich spectrum. But you understand that, okay, predicts only flat spectrum when it has no graceful exit. In fact, inflation was always predicting that there should be this kind of deviation for spectral index. Let's take this formula for the amplitude and let's write generic estimate for the spectral index. And then what you would get? You would get the following result. Ns minus 1 will be equal minus 3 1 plus p over epsilon plus d over d log epsilon 1 plus p over epsilon. For gravity wave, you would get only this first term, because this second term is due to the change of the equation of state, yeah? Now, this thing, in appropriate scale, should be taken at the moment of horizon crossing. We are interested in the scales which left horizon 64 before the end of the inflation. As I told you already, at this moment of time, minimal deviation of equation of state from p equal epsilon should be of the order of 10 minus 2, yeah? Agreed, because if it would be smaller, then inflation would last much longer. If you wouldn't do anything crazy with the equation of state. This term is also negative. It's also negative, why? Because 1 plus p over epsilon should increase towards the end of the inflation, and epsilon is decreasing. So, and therefore, you are getting from here that there should be, okay, deviation of spectral index from n equal 1, at least 3%. And plus this term, even more than 3%. If you would take m squared phi squared series, and for this n s minus 1, you would get 4%. For lambda phi 4 series, you would get 6%. But you could actually look all kinds of generic models, and then you would find that it's quite unlikely that ns will be larger, that ns will be smaller than 0.92, and it should be smaller than 0.97, for sure, practically for sure. You see?
So say it again, the second term, how big is it for this?
This is 10 minus 3, so this term is the same order as the first term for m squared phi squared. But for instance, its ns is equal 0.96. It also depends, of course, on the scale, yeah? For m squared phi squared series, and it's equal 94 for lambda phi 4 series. But you understand that lambda phi 4 series is not so natural. It means that you have thrown something, yeah? From your consideration. Here, something like between 0.95 and 0.96. You know, now, of course, I should spend quite a...
this special heat for lambda, that lambda should be small.
Lambda should be small, but lambda should be small means the same thing, okay, as m squared should be small. M should be small in m squared phi squared theory. You see, because lambda should be, if in m squared phi squared series, you should get mass 10 minus 6 of Planckian mass. Then for lambda phi 4 series, you have to get square with this number, 10 minus 12.
But m and lambda actually drop out of this formula.
For lambda and m drop out from the formula for spectral index.
They drop out.
Yeah, right. So
only amplitude is proportional to this C. But what actually comes is this power. Now, of course, perhaps you heard or you didn't hear, but W up result produced something very useful for this thing. Because the beginning, okay, first release it was NS was 0.99 plus minus 0.04. It was following only from W map or from CMB data itself. But of course, these guys actually first released spoiler a little bit the things because in the abstract of their paper, they put data from CMB, mix them with data for Lyman Alpha Forex, yeah? And then they came to some kind of incredible conclusion like spectral index should not be positive, but it should be running in complete conflict with all so-called simple inflationary models, and then they were writing some kind of, I don't know even how to characterize it, about hybrid inflation. It was first WWAP release, 2003. But of course, after that, there are a lot of people who catch them, and you didn't need to catch them. In fact, actually, it was the wrong strategy which observationalists, or better to say, used under the influence of astrophysicists. You see, there are clean data, CMB data, which are physical data. Why? Because here you have systematics under control. You see, there is not too much room for unknown systematic. And you have the other guy, Lyman Alpha Forest, yeah? Lyman Alpha Forest. And it's astrophysical data, because a lot of messes come in there, a lot of things for systematics. So what they try to do? They tried to fit simultaneously good guy, like CMB, and bad guy, like Lyman Alpha Forest. You see, and the right strategy, of course, would be to use good guy, CMB, to learn something about behavior of bad guy, like Lyman Alpha Forex. But finally, they clarified the thing. Of course, all these Ryan spectral index are gone. Moreover, okay, unexpected thing, because Lyman Page, yeah, who is the principal investigator of ZWAP, he did promise me so good accuracy when we were discussing the necessity to measure deviation of spectral index from n equal 1, yeah? But after 3 years, they got unexpectedly good accuracy because they were able to put some limits on so-called optical depths, as you will see, but doesn't matter. And right now, the result which they gave, your NS is 0.95 plus 0.02, and minus 0.15, something like this. So you see that at the level of 2.5 sigma, this deviation of spectral index from the flat one are detected. So people, in fact, have seen at the level of 2.5 sigma a graceful exit from inflation. What could I say? Because actually, of course, if there would be just flat spectra, then everybody was using blah, 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 blah. What could be else, yeah? And Weinberg always was giving talk and was telling what kind of prediction, okay? I was giving talk in Optical Society, and people told me in Optical Society that these flat spectra are coming everywhere. But I think even in Optical Society, they cannot give good explanation for this logarithmic random, as you understand. And it's quite important thing, of course. And the next important thing will be to detect this gravity wave. Therefore, next time, what I will do, I still have two lectures. So next lecture, I will, you see, I, in turn, some time ago, I deconstructed CMB fast code and I got CMB slow, yeah? So, but it's still a little bit too complicated. Therefore, what I will do next time, I will deconstruct CMB slow further and will simplify it as much as I can and will explain you how all these peaks are appearing. And also after that, I will explain you what is polarization. I don't know, who remembers what is polarization? Nobody. It's so tragic because I didn't remember anything about polarization, so I needed to understand the things myself. I tried to read these papers about CMB, but it was impossible. I could understand nothing, so I started with Landau-Lipschitz and then it went 100 times faster. Yeah. Then these are the standing all these things. Okay, good. So I will, so till next time.